Today's episode is brought to you by Proven Recruiting. As an agency, Proven has helped thousands of technology professionals find new opportunities at exciting companies across the United States. They focus on the quality over quantity approach in terms of building lasting relationships with both their candidates and clients. Today's episode is also brought to you by Golden Squirrel. Ensure the salary and benefit information you're looking for in your next role match before your next interview. Create a free profile today at goldensquirrel.io to get access to members-only employer data, as well as unlock the opportunity for companies to apply to you. On today's episode, Kelly and I chat with Chuck Phillips, who is the co-founder of Meetwell. You can find Meetwell's website at meetwell.app. We discuss his career in software and his journey in startup land. This is actually Chuck's first experience indie hacking, which simply means bootstrapping his way to profitability versus raising money. So we dive into how a successful technical founder goes about learning what to build and how to get to an MVP. And we get to learn this from somebody whose entire career has essentially been in the trenches, learning the tactics of what it takes to build a product that users will love. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Welcome to another episode of Chasing Squirrels. On today's episode, we have Chuck Phillips, and he is the co-founder at Meetwell. Welcome, Chuck.
Hi, good to be here.
And co-host Kelly Feast with Proven Recruiting. Hey, Kelly.
Done.
From a high level, real quick, we'll jump into the details in just a little bit. But from a high level, can you give us a rundown of what Meetwell is and kind of what the overall vision for the company is?
Absolutely. Yeah. Meetwell is an automated calendar assistant that frees your calendar of bad meetings. And additionally, it also attempts to change your team's bad meeting habits.
Does that mean it takes all my meetings off my calendar, or how does that work?
That would be this. Yeah, unfortunately, some good meetings are good, right? If you can hold a good meeting, it's much more productive than like asynchronous communication over email or chat. So good meeting can be super, super productive and super, super effective. The easy fix would be delete all the meetings, but we have to have good meetings in order to build great product, right? So Unfortunately, it's a tricky problem to solve. So we built this calendar assistant with the intention of raising awareness about your good and bad meetings by analyzing them, by giving them all grades. And so you connect this calendar assistant to your calendar, Google or Microsoft. And what it does is it processes a year's worth of your data in your calendar, and it tells you which meetings are good and bad and why. And then it starts to proactively work with your meeting organizers to say, Chuck wants you to meet, groom your meeting in this way. He wants to meet with more intention, you know, and so it needs these things from you. And all of those things can be customized, but Meetwell starts with some sensible defaults based on our research. And so, it's meant to be super low lift. So you connect your calendar, you could just connect it and step away, and then it works where you work. So it connects your calendar and it gives you kind of like a daily report card based on your work week. It analyzes all your, if you have any sort of focus blocks, we call them, or life blocks, like date with the wife or date with my partner, take the kids to the dentist, that sort of thing. It recognizes all of those things and classifies them, and then and gives those meetings that are work-related a grade so that you can improve them. Because if you can't measure something, you can't improve it. You can't make it better, right? And so, yeah, that's what Meetwell is. And I'm excited about it.
I'm going to dive a little bit more into that. This is one of the rare products that I feel like is probably tough to describe elevator pitch wise versus looking at it on your website. Because when I looked at your website, I was like, oh, I get it. Like in 4 seconds.
That makes me so happy.
So I was like, so we'll dive in a little bit more to that product, because I want to go into some of your how you arrived at starting this company. And so for those that don't know, our previous guests, Doug Hecht, and you have kind of been like partners in crime in the past, right? So I'm kind of curious how you guys originally met, and what was one of the first companies, or what was the first company that you guys kind of joined forces in?
Yeah, Doug is a friend and longtime business partner. We've started now 3 businesses together and sold 2 of them. Well, technically we sold 3 of them. But two of them were very successful. I met Doug in like 97 or 98, and we ended up building a company called Consul, which was a digital marketing agency heavily focused on engineering. And this was very early in the day, right? We would, like, for instance, one of our early clients was NBC. And so we built and managed all the affiliated NBC news sites. We built everything from scratch. Like, there were no frameworks. This was early in the early days of the internet. And so one of our other clients who I am excited about being part of was the Padres. We were the first folks to stream Padres games online. This was when they went to the World Series. And I remember being in a dusty little office downtown where close to where Petco Park is now, streaming Padres games late into the night as they got swept by the Yankees in the World Series. So that digital marketing agency, we met a guy named Dan Kabi and Daga Atvara, who ran Digitaria. And these were two small digital agencies, and we merged them together and built them into a relatively large digital agency called Digitaria, and ended up selling that to WPP. And we worked there for another 5 years after the sale. And then Doug and I got together again. I worked there 6 years. Doug left after five. I met up with Doug again a year later, and we started a fitness technology company called Limber, which did dynamically priced fitness classes, drop-in, right? So if you're a yoga studio, Pilates studio, whatnot, cryotherapy studio, and you aren't at capacity, your drop-in rates are typically high to incentivize people to sign up for a subscription, a membership. And so they had all this perishable inventory that was intentionally priced high, that we would say, hey, give that to us. This is waste opportunity. We'll dynamically price it based on the time of day, the weather, all these various factors, and sell them one off and make you a little more revenue. And so we built that and launched it. And around the time we were ready to do our first year's taxes, we sold to Mindbody, which is the largest fitness.
It's a big one.
Yeah, it's a big one. It's largest in the fitness space. And so Doug worked there another 3 years, I think. And I worked there 4 years again. And Doug started Walla, who you've already interviewed. And that team there is amazing, doing amazing work. I've got a little sneak peek at the product they're building. It's going to be very disruptive in that space. And while I was at Mindbody, I was a VP of software engineering in the San Diego office. And it changed a lot in those 4 years. It went from being a small remote office building out their consumer team, and where we're fast moving, to being slow moving. And we were just kind of becoming a more like the big company, parent company. And I remember doing some reflection, because I would go home and I was grumpy, and I'd, you know, be impatient with the kids and whatnot, you know, being a grumpy old man. And I asked myself, why am I grumpy? Like, what's going on? What's changed? And I realized that I wasn't there. There's a great book called Drive by Daniel Pink. I don't know if you've heard of it. And in that book, he talks about how that we need three things to be happy at work. We need autonomy, we need purpose, and we need to be able to master our craft. And at Mindbody, we definitely had a purpose. It was helping people become healthier, right? Fit. And I had autonomy, or so I thought, right? I was a VP, I could make decisions. But I was bogged down in meetings. Meetings were dividing my day. As Jason Fried says, from Basecamp, he says that too many meetings is like a Cuisinart. It divides your work day into work moments. And I found that to be true. I just, you know, I'd come in and I'd try to get something done. I'd be pulled into a meeting, and was it worth my time? maybe 70% of the time, no. And it would disrupt my plan to get such and such creative work done or work done. And then I'd lunch and then I'd blah, blah, blah. And the same thing would happen day after day, week after week, month after month. And I felt like, no, I didn't have autonomy. There's an expectation that I be in these meetings. They're not effective. They're not worth my time or anybody else's time. And was I mastering my craft? No, because I'm in meetings all day. And so that's where I kind of got the idea that somebody needs to solve this. And I kind of looked around and I saw that there have been many companies that have tried to improve meetings. And so many of them have not done a good job. And I mean, there's in 2019, just to give you a sense, in 2019, American companies spent $400 billion on bad meetings. So there's an opportunity here to solve it. No one's really doing a good job solving this. And Mindbody, we recognized we had this problem. The CEO hired an expensive consultant to come in and listen and learn and then give us feedback and teach us how to run effective meetings. And we did that for like days or weeks. And then we reverted back to our bad meeting habits. And I realized we were falling back to when you have goals, you fall back to old habits, right? You fall the level of your systems. It says, there's a great book called Atomic Habits. It says, if you don't have systems that you can rely on, then you'll just revert to bad behavior, your bad habits. So you have to you might rise to your level of your goals, but you'll fall the level of your systems. So Meatwell's built with the intention of being a system of trust that you can lean on to enforce those good behaviors. And so, that's Mindbody was a great place. I worked with amazing people. I had purpose. I got compensated really well. Why was I grumpy? Well, I was grumpy because I didn't have work-life harmony. I wasn't mastering my craft. I wasn't feeling fulfillment from my job. And we don't work. We don't live to work. We work so that we could live, right? We work so we can have comforts. But I was just working and it was swallowing up my life because I had to do, in order to get stuff done, I had to do it in this weird like second shift outside of the workday. And so it's not healthy. And I'm super hippie, the more you get to know me. I want to do good in the world. And I may never, you know, will Meatwell take off? It's brand new. We're just launching. We're just starting to do marketing and advertising and find out if outside of our closed beta that this thing has legs. But my hope is that Meatwell can make people's work-life balanced, that they're better than that. It can create work-life harmony.
So is this one of the, is this the first company where you're going to be CTO and CEO roles kind of combined?
That's a great question, because so many times Doug has done the CEO operations, raised the money, and I was product, right? I was product and engineering, and I'm good at product and engineering. I'm terrible at raising money. I don't know anything about raising money. I don't know anything about courting investors or keeping them up to date or, you know, term sheets, or I don't even know what a term sheet is. It is. And for that reason, I'm indie hacking it. I'm bootstrapping it. Cause
like it,
an investor would probably laugh me out of the room when I tried to talk their talk. I can't talk their talk. And they would sniff me out in a second. So, I bootstrapped it, self-funded, and I'm even doing my own taxes. I did my own taxes this year. I'm very proud of myself.
Well, I don't advise that, but I like all the rest of it.
I have to comment on this hippie thing. I'm sorry, but I remember visiting you in the office, Chuck, and you may or may not have had shoes on about 50% of the time.
I did not.
And I remember your biggest vice is Coca-Cola.
Diet Coke.
That's about it.
Diet Coke. And working in the fitness industry and drinking Diet Coke, you get a constant judgment, but I endured.
you stayed strong. So
my advice.
So I'm kind of curious on this. So the problem you're solving is something that I think everybody can relate to, right? And so I think the most interesting thing about this is, so I previously had a company and we had lots of bad meetings. And every time I would be like, all right, so this meeting's costing me $3,000, right? And everybody's tired and we're not getting anything done. Cause I'd always be like, okay, per hour. And I saw the calculator on your webpage that people can enter in how much a meeting costs. And so I stopped doing it because I just get too sad. So it's just like, oh man, these are really expensive meetings. So I'm curious, what was your initial thought process on what's like the MVP for this? And I'm curious what some of those assumptions were that were correct, but I'm also curious what were some that were wrong that you learned and like how you're going about testing it in real life. Cause that's a really interesting process that you're experienced and you've been through. And I think people could definitely learn from. And I'm curious how that's been so far. Cause that's, I feel like, the hardest part, right?
Definitely. I'll start with the incorrect assumptions question. So when we started, again, being hippies, we thought, let us take this wellness approach. Let's tread softly. Let's make this about wellness and employee retention. And we're very much averse to anything big brothery. So no manager can come in and, you know, micromanage you to the point where they find out, you know, things about you that would put your position at risk. None of that. So we went in with this wellness play, like we're pure wellness, and realized we're dealing with people who also care about saving money and increasing productivity. And we're dealing with very busy people. People who are so busy, they're working this second shift that I talked about, where you're working on doing work outside of the work week. And so we realized we need to create additional incentives and focus on accountability. People who were being affected by bad meetings, like we had a lot of engineers, we had some engineering managers in our beta. We had a lot of engineers and creative people, makers, we call them. And so the makers who were being affected by the bad meetings were signing up, hopefully with lots of hope in that the people who are putting these bad meetings on their schedule would follow them along. And we found out that they weren't. As Meatwell reached out to those people, because there wasn't this, the changes that we've made recently where there's more of an accountability play, they were just saying, oh yeah, I'm busy though. And so they would archive or ignore or whatever the things that Meatwell was suggesting that they do. And so now our next version is we're including an organizer leaderboard and organizer metrics where you can say, like, on my team, this is the chart over any time span of how well Chuck's meetings are performing. Chuck is an organizer. And so he started off with straight Fs just for a long, long time. And then Meatwell we signed up for Meatwell and he started to get notifications that he needed to groom his meetings better and prepare and include, create more intention around the meetings he's organizing. And so we see this hockey stick in terms of his grade. And why is that? Well, because everyone can see it. It's a leaderboard thing. It's not, we're trying to make it light and gamified, but still there's a very intentional accountability play here. And so we learned that people need incentives. It's not everybody's a hippie. We're all super busy. We're trying to cram all of this work in this small amount of time and our time is finite. And so we had to kind of ratchet that up a little bit more.
Can you try to quantify like the dream meeting or like characteristics of like a good meeting, a great meeting, like what that might look like?
Yeah, you know what? I can maybe answer that by talking about a lot of common bad meetings. One thing that we see a lot is these very large meetings for information sharing. And all the memes that you read about this meeting could have been an email. Those are typically information sharing meetings, but there's this positive intention on behalf of the organizer, where their intention is that I want to be inclusive. I want Bob and Jane and Sally and everybody to have a chance to hear these things so that they feel like they're part of the team, not understanding that by inviting them, there's this stigma to denying or declining meetings, right? If someone, especially in a management position, says, you know, you should be there, and they don't take the time and effort to make them optional, and depending on your culture, optional might not mean anything. Just the fact that you got the meeting means you better be there. But their intention might have been to be inclusive, and we see a lot of that. Like people have these massive meetings where two people are talking. One of them's probably a senior in a senior position, monopolizing the meeting, and that senior person leaves the meeting feeling good about the meeting. They got to be heard, but everybody else was just thinking about the work they're not getting done. And this could have been an email. And we see that time and time again. The good meetings are those that are more, creative brainstorming meetings, where that are very process-driven and structured are great. Where you're going in saying, this is the goal, this is our objective, and we're going to get to that point by including these people. And we've found that science says a meeting should have less than seven people. Seven or less people. And so we're going to be very deliberate about who is included, and we're going to assign these roles, and we're going to give them this pre-work, and they're going to come with, you know, these ideas. And if they don't have them, they can opt out or say they're too busy, then they can assign a delegate. But being extremely deliberate and intentional tends to lead to a better meeting. The cost of creating a good meeting is pretty high. Unfortunately, the cost of creating a bad meeting is extremely low. It's clicking Google Calendar and invite. And I'll get to the agenda later. I'll think about it later. And too often it's meant as kind of a to-do list. I'm going to put this recurring meeting on the team's calendar. We're going to do these check-ins, and it's totally unstructured. It's totally unprepared. It ends up being like just a way to chop their day up.
Did you start this company before, during, or after COVID started?
So that great question. My last day at Mindbody, I can't actually remember. It was sometime mid-March. And so lockdown happened somewhere around mid-March. So I was telling people about my idea for some time before. Obviously, I was, after I left, and then somewhere a month, 2 months, 3 months later, I started getting emails and texts saying, hurry up. My day is followed by Zoom. Like day and night, I'm on Zoom and it's killing me. And these aren't not just, you know, planners, makers, managers. These are makers as well. These are folks that they're expected to produce. We're in this knowledge-based industry where we're knowledge workers. We have this autonomy, and we're expected to produce. We're judged based on our output. But then all of these things and are distracting us and from producing output. And one of those things, one of those many things, is bad meetings. And so when COVID hit and Zoom became another, you know, just amplified them, it just blew up on everyone's calendars. I had a lot of engineering friends that reached out and just begged for me to hurry up.
What are some of the changes that happened as a result of the Zoom versus in-person stuff?
Not a lot. Except we put more of an emphasis on the whether or not a Zoom, or we support every video conferencing software, but whether or not Zoom or a similar package was attached to a meeting. But other than that, the core tenets of the software weren't really affected by remote work. We were always kind of, hybrid work was always a thing. And MindBody was always very open to hybrid. We had a lot of folks that worked in the office 3 days a week already, you know, and 2 days remote or whatever, in the San Diego office at least. And so that was always kind of front of mind.
I'm curious. It kind of reminds me of, have you heard of Ray Dalio's system of meetings? His is a little less hippie and more cutthroat because it's a hedge fund, but it's more of like you can, it actively takes in everybody's investing ideas within the meeting itself, and people can vote how they feel about those ideas. And then historically it looks back during the meetings to see who is the most correct on all of those things. So it's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you asked me about MVP. I just remembered your first question. MVP for Meetwell is pre-meeting. So we were focused on a meeting being prepared well. The next phase is during meeting. So we're going to have some utility and function around how well the meeting is being run and how to run a good meeting. And then the last phase is post-meeting and evaluating the effectiveness of the meeting and follow-up and information distribution. We're very interested in microblogging. Atomic is a very progressive company. They've been remote since long before, I think since their inception. But Atomic came out with this really great thing called microblogging, where the CEO said he gets 2 to 3 emails a month because they're so transparent and everything is in, is all the meetings are and conversations are having in a public forum within the company or an open forum within the company. And you can basically say like, I'm interested in these things and tell the software what to watch out for, kind of Google Trends or Google Alerts, excuse me. And then it'll notify you, or if you get called out directly. So those sorts of things are kind of on the roadmap for the future.
I want to go back to the pre-meeting thing. Maybe I'm just venting, but I can, it reminds me so much of when there isn't an agenda to the meeting and then you have no way to prepare. And then you get to the meeting and nobody has an educated thought because they didn't even know what the meeting was going to be about. And to your point, someone's taking hold and they're on their soapbox, but nobody can really form a mature thought because they haven't had time to think ahead of time. So yeah, sign me up. the pre-meeting list.
it's interesting in analyzing why a meeting might have been good or bad and the differences of opinion. You know, like I said, an executive who did all the talking might leave thinking that was great. Whereas maybe an introverted maker, I might be stereotyping, but let's just say there's an introverted maker that had something to say, but it wasn't like the right form or channel or the right environment. It wasn't welcoming enough for that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. creating a space for that person to be heard is important because you know, the world runs best with all personality types collaborating. And so you have really amazing people in an organization that might not be boisterous enough to get mm-hmm. their voice heard. Mm-hmm. And so if you can run a meeting well enough that you know what you need to get from the attendees, but to your point, Kelly, there isn't that much preparation being done. And everything I've said sounds probably extremely high ceremony, and that's by design. Because if it is high ceremony, right now it's extremely low ceremony, put it on my calendar, my work day's divided in half. Put it again, now it's divided into thirds. So by making it more ceremonious, we're putting that work on the organizer to do that ceremony. But what we're also doing is we're ensuring that it's worth the ceremony. The meeting, if you go through these steps, it's probably going to be a better meeting. It's probably going to be more worth your time.
and so much more productive and so much more open to innovation, because people actually have a platform and a time and a designation of like, okay, I get this part of the meeting, or this part's reserved for open dialogue, or this part's the Q&A, or like they know where they can insert themselves. Last thing I'll say about this is that we tried something at our company, the opposite of like being worried if too many people would chime in. We actually started segmenting leaders meetings where everybody got 3 minutes of uninterrupted time. And it sounded good in theory because then everybody had a chance to share, but it cuts off dialogue because it's uninterrupted time for every person. And so you think it's good because now everybody's getting heard, but there's no exchange of thought. And like, I'm feeling something while so-and-so is talking, but it's not my turn to talk. And then when you talk, you're trying to share your part, but it's, so anyways, there's definitely different attempts going around that I think also are good intended, but this, I think, will modernize. I mean, and just revolute. It's a trainer for me.
that experimentation is encouraging, though. Like Cal Newport, the author of Deep Work, talks about, he just wrote a new book, and I can't remember the title. I haven't read it yet, but I heard him on a podcast where he talked about, you know, in the early days of the Industrial Revolution, it was messy. Like Ford knew this is the way forward. This is how we're going to scale. But in those early days, the line would get backed up if someone messed up, like trying to put a steering wheel on, they can't get it on in time, and it backs up the line and stops the line. We have a mess on our hands, and people are miserable because they're so distracted. They're not able to get what they need from their work. They're not doing purposeful work, or they're not able to do their purposeful work. So we need to experiment. We need to make changes. There's an author of a book I read called The Surprising Science of Meetings. His name is Steven Rosenberg. And he said that essentially that there is no, let me see what if I might have a quote here. And there's no single investment that organizations treat so carelessly with so little evaluation or drive to improve than meetings. And it's so true. It's like it's a hard problem to solve, so they've given up. And but those companies like the one you just mentioned, where they're experimenting, they're going to get it wrong, but they should keep experimenting because it's already very, very, very broken. People are miserable right now because they're not able to find space to do their creative work, to master their craft. And so it's better if you don't sign up for Meetwell, fine, but keep experimenting. Keep trying to make it better for your employees' sake, or you're going to see people leave. They're going to go places that they can do good work at. They can,
yeah. There's space this to work. Reminds me of my job in staffing. You know, an interview is just another form of a meeting. And there's so much brokenness to the interview process, the interview experience, the agenda, the lack of agenda, the debriefs, the pre-work. I mean, it really ties into maybe what I coach people on all day of like, please just make this a good experience so that someone ultimately wants to take a job and stay with you. So it bleeds into that world. But I want to ask you, where the heck this amazing mindset and just like, you're calling it hippiness, I'm calling it like authenticity and just awareness, mindfulness. Where did this come from? Can you go farther back? Like, did someone give you a book and you just couldn't help yourself since then? Or did you have some childhood aware? Like, where did this come from for you?
Thank you. That's feels like a huge compliment. But I've worked with amazing people since I quit going to college and didn't graduate and started companies. And I've just kind of like tried to become more like the people around me. Like we've talked about Doug and Matt Asonio, who was also on the podcast, like all of these great people, my current business partners are terrific. Being around people who are very purpose-driven creates, you know, that in you. I mean, you adopt it. You see, like, I like that about them. I want to be more like that. And so I'm going to try and copy them. And so I'm not anything. I mean, the people I work with are amazing.
So you're embodying the qualities then. And I think you're all those comments you've made so far about different books, that's another version of associations, right? Like you're filling your mind, you're associating with those authors and their thought process as well. So yeah. Just really empowering, I'd say. One other question is, do you remember the first time when you were like, we're going to start a business? Not even just like that thought, but then like, did you wake up the next day and just like, for entrepreneurs out there that think they have a great idea, like what's the first step? Or like, do you remember bringing it to life or like how it just kind of happened?
I'd say like the first company with Doug, I would credit Doug as the entrepreneur. I was very risk averse. Relative to Doug, I still am, although I've come a long way. And again, this is over the decades, me becoming more like the people around me. But he was the entrepreneur and I was the scaredy cat. And I learned from him how to be more risk tolerant in terms of entrepreneurship and to take chances, but you know, calculated chances. And so I don't have any secrets. I've just tried to learn from the smart people around me. I'm a simple caveman, to be honest.
Okay, if you say so.
I don't know. I would say like, you know, in terms of Meatwell, I've been nervous every single time. It's not like I'm going to this like confident, I'm going to rule the world, I'm going to be a gajillionaire, I'm going to do the X, Y, and Z. With Meatwell, it was completely purpose-driven. I'm bootstrapping it. I want to do some good. I want to solve a problem no one seems to be trying to solve, or if they are, they're not doing it in the right way, in my humble opinion. And you know, swallow the fear and press forward. So, you know, I'm doing a very poor job of answering that question, but mainly because I don't
know. I think it's just even more authentic. So thank you. Sure. we need a book, a list of those books you're mentioning, because I think there's a lot of good takeaways there. But I'm excited to see what Meatwell does. I know every time you switch companies, I kind of poke around and until something pops up or to kind of see what the master, the brainchild is next. So can you share with us kind of just the technologies you're using with Meatwell, just so people have a sense of what the platform is?
Absolutely. I am using my favorite language, Ruby. So we on the back end, I use Ruby on Rails. On the front end, React. Excited to be using a lot of standards, really cool new tech. When we built this, though, from the ground up, one of the things that we wanted to start with was an emphasis and a focus on security. And so one of the things we talk about is that we probably could have launched months earlier, but we started by ensuring that everything is secure by default, everything at every domain, every level. One of the things we're very proud of is our security. And so we like to say that we could upload our database, export a database to a public server, and it's just ones and zeros and gobbledygook because everything's encrypted. No, it wouldn't get anybody anywhere. We've got all our I's dotted and T's crossed. The other thing we're very proud of is that we don't use, speaking of being hippies, we don't track anybody. We don't have any sort of, we don't use Google Analytics. We use another indie hacker company called Fathom Analytics, and it's totally anonymous. We don't know anything about where you are, what you're doing, blah, 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 where you're going. We know enough to tell us which pages are more effective, which views are more effective, how the systems are performing. But we don't track anybody. We don't look at your data. We can't look at your data. So very proud of that. And that was hard to do. That was a lot of work. I know Rails had a lot to do with that. That was a lot of stuff we get free out of the box with Rails. And I know there's this whole, oh, and then I forgot to mention Python for machine learning and we're building a NLP with Python. So
I think I know the answer to my own question. You just like building stuff. Like you can't.
I love building stuff. When I was in management, every management position I've had, I've tried to keep space so that I could contribute to the building, often to the chagrin of my engineers. So they're much better than I am. Although now that I'm proud of what I built. The product's great. Trust me. Well, product's great. My code's good. I don't mean to lower anybody's expectations, but I've always tried to keep space to keep coding because that is what makes me happy.
The only thing I wanted to add was I was actually a culprit of terrible meetings, and my co-founder at the time, who was a maker and was super technical, I would always come in because I like to wing it, right? And so I would come in and be like, all right, here's this, our product roadmap. What should we do for the next year and a half? This is a really big decision. I think it should be this or this. What do you think? And he would just not answer. And it was so frustrating to me for like probably 6 months it took me to realize. And he was like, Jeff, I think we read a Tony Robbins book, or I forget what book we read. It might have been Traction or a Tony Robbins book. I can't remember now. And one of them was just like, some people like to think about solutions for at least 24 hours before stating their opinion. Yeah. And so I don't think I've ever thought about anything for 24 hours before. And so, which makes me completely at fault for the reason that those meetings weren't going well, was I was the person that was like, oh, that went well. Like everybody seemed to agree, but it was not going well and nobody was agreeing. It's just, I was not allowing for other people to share their opinions in a way that they're used to doing so. And so once we solved that, everything worked perfectly. And it was actually probably a good governor because I wasn't allowed to put random meetings on calendars unless they were 24 hours out with an agenda attached. And so it was a much more thoughtful discussion the next time we went through. So some people listening, you're having bad meetings, you just don't know it.
That's right. Yeah, no one's measuring this. And that's why we started with the analysis piece. So if you when you first log into Meetwell, it immediately processes the first month of your meetings, and then it backgrounds the entire year. And you can go in and say, like, what is the state of the onion? You know, what does my calendar look like in terms of meetings, and get some idea. But whereas previously you're just, you schedule it and you don't think about it and what effect it might have on someone. And that was the purpose, was let us create more intention. Let us be more intentional about how we spend our own time, but also how we spend other people's time, because we're not at the moment.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
All right. That's all I got. Do you have any other questions, Kelly?
No, I need to fix my calendar.
adding an agenda fixed like 90% of the problem for me. And then you're also right in that you go back to, we tried Traction, there's meeting guide in there of how to have meetings, and as soon as it doesn't work, which it says in the book it will not work the first time, you just immediately default back to your, we try to right. go through that like 3 or 4 times, so
yeah.
So I've made all the mistakes that you're discussing.
Yeah, it's very much a behavior driven thing. It's about habits more than we often realize.
Anything else about Meetwell that you'd like to share that we didn't cover?
No, I think that's it. It's really great to be on the podcast with you. Thank you for your time.
If you guys want to check out meetwell.app as well, visually you'll understand everything super quickly because it's laid out super nice on there. And then if you won't feel too much pain, you can go to the instant ROI calculator of how much money you're wasting in your meetings as well. That's on the webpage.
Yeah. If you connect your calendar, it actually tells you, it has like a default average, you know, median salary for the area, and it'll tell you how much you're spending.
Ooh, that's cool. I'm definitely going to do that. All right. I appreciate you coming on. Thanks for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again for listening to today's episode. Today's episode was brought to you by Proven Recruiting. As an agency, Proven has helped thousands of technology professionals find new opportunities at exciting companies across the United States. They focus on the quality over quantity approach in terms of building lasting relationships with both their candidates and clients. Don't forget to subscribe for more insights where we bring job posts to life.